tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 469 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
And Crocodile.
Evening.
Welcome back, guys. Another week of Toonami. However, another week without any news. We're pretty much locked in, I think, to this lineup for a while.
It's Blue Locust on the block for a while.
I was going to say more like cocked in, but I don't know if that's a...
Ha! Yeah, it won't be the last cock joke tonight, I think. Well, speaking of which, I guess we'll just go ahead and run into the rundown here with our first show, Rooster Fighter.
Something's approaching.
Rooster Fighter, Episode 4, Homing In on Desire. I think this title is an allusion to some of the characters' realization of what's going on with the demons and how they're formed.
At least some of them. I don't know if this is how all demons are formed, but there's definitely a pattern between this demon and, for example, Pops a few episodes back and whatnot.
Yeah. So the episode starts, we see that Pyoko is being carried by that cat. And once the cat gets to where it's going, it kind of drops Pyoko on the ground, and or Pyoko kind of hides in like a pipe, and Elizabeth and KG come running up, and we see that the cat is like a mama cat and has a whole bunch of kittens and is saying, and it starts speaking, which was another kind of like revelation. It's like, at first I thought they were going to do a thing where like the cats and the chickens couldn't talk to each other because you hear like her inner monologue. But then they just straight up start talking to each other.
I think it's probably narratively more convenient if all the animals can talk to each other. You see that in a lot of other shows, like Dr. Doolittle. I'm not Dr. Doolittle, but like, any show where a bunch of different animals together, they all can talk to each other, but none of them can talk to humans. Or so we thought. Dun, dun, dun.
Right. And so she explains that, you know, she was only doing this because she needed to feed her kittens. And
the reason why she needed to feed her kittens is. Even though they point out that she's like a house cat, she's got a collar and everything, but her masters are currently obsessed with digging holes.
Yeah, we see them. We see all the humans in this village are just like zombies, just digging holes everywhere. Elizabeth does a thing here where she's like, oh, well, let me help you out. And like just lays an egg right there.
And it's.
This is weird.
food for the baby, the kittens. And she's like, it's unfertilized, so it's fine. Like, okay.
It's like, I needed to do this anyway. And it's like, okay, I guess. It was a little weird, but all right. Again, it's like the humor. It's just like a little off, but it's just like, okay. And like you said, the humans are all like, you know, in this town seem to be memorized, except for a group of kids who are hiding out in like a kind of barn. Or they're kind of locked up in there, basically.
Yeah. I don't know if they reveal why the kids aren't affected by the monster's ability, which we learn later is basically it's like a hypnosis. It affects Pyoko later. So I guess the kids could have been hypnotized, but instead they're just locked up.
I mean, they may have just been avoided, like the monster may just maybe never use it on them, or they avoided
it's not really worth thinking about. The kids are all locked up. None of them are hypnotized, even though they probably could have been.
Yeah, I will say that I didn't even think of that until you mentioned it. You're right. It is strange, but maybe like the demon was like, oh, they're too weak or something. I don't know.
They're not useful in digging holes.
Right. Maybe. Yeah. And I think the Piyoko thing was more just like a spur of the moment thing or whatever. Yeah.
Well, they were the demon was trying to aim for KG and Elizabeth. It's only they dodged and Piyoko got hit.
Yeah.
So
that right. That's yeah. right. Anyway, the children are trying to escape. They're having a hard time. Elizabeth and KG find them. And then Elizabeth's like, hang on a second. I'm going to ask these kids something, and whips out the smartphone and starts using the text-to-speech function on it and starts talking to these kids using the phone. She does this for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, and the kids are like, these chickens are geniuses.
I mean, they are. Like, she's human intelligence. That's like, insane. Like, that was pretty cool.
That's the part that they don't comment on, funny enough. They only comment on the fact that they're like, that chicken is using a smartphone. And it's like, well, yeah, but aren't you more interested in the fact that the chicken has like intelligence and can speak and understand
no,
you?
No, I think at one point in the episode they do say the chicken is a genius or something. It's like an offhand remark from one of the kids.
Yeah, but I mean, the chicken being able to communicate with the phone is their form of speech, and that in itself is already insane. Like that's that's already insane. You don't need to go any further. That's insane.
Imagine if you observed a chicken doing that, you would be freaking the.
You'd be like, "What the heck is? Are all chickens this smart?
Or am I losing it? Is this a joke?"
No, I think the joke is that in this series, people are like blasé about this to a certain extent. I mean, they're a little shocked. But they're kind of also like very forgiving of it, you know.
I remember back in episode one, they were complimenting the Cage when he was taking on the monster. I do think they're reasonably surprised. Maybe they should be more surprised, but they are still like pretty surprised.
They're surprised, but they're also just like cool with it, like out of the gate. They're just like, this is like the only time I think it really comes up. And then the kids are just like, they're going to communicate with these chickens for the rest of the episode and be like, hey, whatever. There's just people.
That's what they do. That's what chickens do.
Probably helps that they're like demons in this world. So there's already a bit of like supernatural nonsense going around. Mm-hmm. So maybe that kind of smooths the edges a little bit.
So Elizabeth asks the kids a bunch of questions like, what's going on here? How are you doing? That's where we get the explanation that there's this demon that's taken over the nearby mansion and it's forcing all the humans to dig and everything. And it's and Kate and Elizabeth's like, I want you, we should probably help these children, to defeat this demon. And KG's like, I don't care. This isn't the demon I'm looking for. So why should I care? He's very, again, this is his like Fist of the North Star is a bad example. It's more like a Jotaro type situation where he just, it's very selfish.
Well, no, Jotaro pretends not to care. He actually cares a lot. So.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, and that's the archetype, is the not like the very like who gives a crap kind of.
Like what's in it for me?
Right, my selfish nature.
And apparently, what's in it for KG is the rut.
Yes, so we get this like moment where he's like, the Lord of the Rut is arriving, and it's like I guess apparently every so often he gets he's a rooster, so I guess every so often he gets an uncontrollable urge that he can't quell. He starts going kind of crazy and he's like, Elizabeth, you need to help me with this. And then she's like, makes a deal with him. She's like, well, I'll tell you what, if you help me with these kids, I'll oblige you. And so now he's got a mission. And while this is going on, Say, the oldest boy, has kind of snuck away and he's gone up to the mansion to face off with the monster. And that's the first commercial break, or the commercial break. When we come back, the monster and the kid Say is facing off, and we learn that the monster is actually his father, and it's in the form of this big demon with zippers all over it. And he kind of unzips his chest, and the father's head kind of pokes out and starts talking to him.
Yep, and then here's where we basically get the story where, in this case, the dad was like kind of a gambling loser, like my next break will be my big one. Even though I borrowed money, I'm going to make it back. That sort of thing. We've seen it before. I guess just kind of on a random hike, he like stumbles across like, I'm trying to remember what it was, like a treasure map.
It was like a treasure map.
It was a couple. It was a couple coins. It was a couple coins and a map. Right. And then there was reason for him to believe there was treasure around that he needed to find. Remind me if I'm wrong. Something.
No,
like
no,
that.
That's it exactly. Yeah.
I think he was walking off and then fell off a cliff and ran to like a partially buried box that had some coins and then like the treasure map or like what looked he deciphered as a treasure map. And that's what led him to start. Okay, the treasure must be treasure somewhere around here. If I can find more of these coins, I'll be, you know, a bazillionaire or whatever because they're from like hundreds of years ago. So they're worth a lot now. And he spends next year digging a hole. Much to the chagrin of his son and the entire village who mocks him and berates him for like, what are you doing? Take care of your family. Stop being a crazy bigger man or whatever you want to say.
In this case, it's like this obsession that eventually turns him into this monster. The other monsters that we've seen, it wasn't necessarily like an obsession, but there's always some sort of like heightened emotion of some sort that kind of led people to kind of losing their like, I guess, human composure. And they grow this, they always grow this little, like, it's like a boil on their neck that kind of pops and turns them into a demon. So in this case, it was like this obsession over wealth and like finding it.
I think the important distinction to make here is that it doesn't, at least for this individual and for Pops, it didn't actually turn them to demons, but rather a demon grew off of them and then kind of like overtook them. But like the father here was still a separate entity, just back in the second episode, Pops was still a separate entity, even though there was a demon in his form, whatnot. So it's like a distinct creation off of them that overtakes them, but they don't actually turn into demons, which I think is probably an important distinction.
Yeah, and there's actually, that's true, because like when Say's dad is kind of like, we're during like this part where we're seeing this backstory, he's talking to Say, and he's even still like saying, you know, that we're still going to find this treasure. He hasn't really given up on that yet. And I actually wrote this down. He says at one point, "Hey, monster, zip me up." Like he's talking to like the monster as if it is a different person. And in this case, kind of almost kind of silly, like, "Hey, just, you know, close the zipper. I don't want to talk to my son anymore." So
I think another interesting thing, too, that Elizabeth points out later is that all the zippers on this monster represent the zippers on a money bag. Because
like
this guy's obsessed like with money, a wallet. Yeah. And the other thing that's worth mentioning briefly, too, is that not only is this guy like an obsessive gambler, he's also a drunk and just an overall like a poor father. He's letting his kid down. Anyway, KG and Elizabeth and Pyoko show up and they start to face off with the monster. This big battle ensues. Electric shocking weapon isn't enough to defeat him. And then she has an idea when she sees some power lines nearby and she's like, "KG, you know, lure him this way." And he does that. And the big wrap of it is that they end up getting it near that, those power lines, and it ends up shocking him and defeating the monster. Also worth interesting to note too, that during the battle, the money that he was looking for, he actually finds it. But then it gets buried. So it did exist.
I think he just stumbled upon some of it while he was chasing down KG and Elizabeth. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then that distracts him so they, you know, KG can set up, and then both Elizabeth and KG can set up their plans and whatnot. So.
Right.
Because I think they're fighting him and they're realizing that he was like weirdly durable and like weirdly fast, so like just head to, and of course, as you mentioned, Elizabeth's electricity wasn't working at first, so he was definitely a much tougher opponent than expected, which is why they had to enact their plan, so to speak. This of course helped them further.
Yeah, the battle is relatively lengthy. It's a few minutes,
right? And it was, I mean, there's a lot that happens in it. I didn't write down notes because it was just a lot of it, but it's,
yeah, I mean, you can pretty much just say like a couple punches later, you know, we don't need to regale the battle.
Right. Yeah.
That was pretty cool, all things speaking.
Oh,
all
yeah.
Things, nice. All things said, but, you know, yeah, it's just like they fight and it actually seems like a pretty cool, decently choreographed fight. But, and then you go on from there.
Yeah. Yep.
So he wins. And, you know, I think, you know, Sai is like worried that, you know, don't kill my dad. He's my dad still. Anyway, they beat it. And then this happens twice. But in the first time it happens is that Keiji's like, it's like, "I beat the monster. Let's go." He's talking to Elizabeth.
And Elizabeth is like, "No."
Yeah. She's like, "What? You really thought I was going to do that? I hate you, remember?" And he's like, no! And he gets really mad.
He kind of takes it out on Keiji's dad, like, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, and I mean, like, straight up to the point where
Say's dad, excuse me.
Say's dad, and, like does his, like, attack on him, like his, you know, his finishing move or whatever. Doesn't kill him. But then in this moment, the dad kind of, like, steps up and blocks it, you know, tries to block it and protect his son, and he turns over a new leaf in this moment.
Well, the son actually tries to protect his dad, I think.
Right, and then his dad tries to, you know, protect the son in turn, so, yeah.
Right.
Like, no, don't hurt my son, like, you know, kill, like, and then Say's dad does a whole kind of spiel, groveling, no, if you have to kill anyone, kill me, save my son, spare my son. It's kind of, like, being emphatic that, like, you know, trying to make up for lost time in the being a worthwhile dad department.
Yep. Yeah, he turns over a new leaf here, and, you know, it's a kind of a happy ending for them. And, however, Keiji ends up getting cock-blocked once again.
Lord of the Rut leaves.
Yeah, the Rut leaves, and he's just like, no. And so, yeah, so, like, things work out pretty well. And, you know, once the demon is defeated, everyone in the village turns back to normal. And they're like, what were we doing? You know, the hypnosis wears off. And by the way, Pyoko, like you said earlier, she had gotten hypnotized and was, like, pecking at the ground. And now she's back to normal. And the last scene of the episode is setting up the next episode, where after the battle is over, we see there's, like, some creeper guy who with a smartphone who was filming the battle. And he's like, can't wait to upload this, you know, and.
Go viral is, I think, term you use. I think he might have had a camcorder, or maybe I was imagining things. But yeah, how did this random normal human just videotape his entire battle and not get, like, squished or electrocuted or whatever?
Yeah, well, I might be reading too much into this, but, like, I wonder if this is, like, the guy who's been uploading a lot of these, because apparently there's been a lot of these videos. Yeah,
Elizabeth
out there.
Was talking about that earlier, right? So maybe it might be But my storm chaser, but for demons or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it also just feels inevitable. Like in a modern society, if you have these big monsters and these chickens attacking the monsters, someone's going to capture it on, you know, record it somewhere. So, like, inevitable.
One last note I have about this episode is, again, it's another bit of, like, mild world building that I think I write it off, but I just thought it's worth mentioning. There was a really quick shot in this episode during the battle, whereas Elizabeth is using her electric weapon, and it has, like, controls on it, and she's, like, hitting the controls with her talons or whatever, and, like, click, 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 activating things. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, who made that? Like, how did I know her family was rich, but, like, who made this weapon for this chicken?
Is it, like, a cattle prod? That's not what a cattle prod looks like.
No, right? It's too, like, high tech.
Yeah,
it kind of looks like some more, like,
right,
Ghostbusters device or something, honestly.
Yeah, like something that kind of. And it has, like, buttons that just, like, they're just the right size for her. And I don't know. I think I'm not supposed to think about this, but I'm thinking about it. I'm like, who made this?
No, I think it's totally fair. I think, you know, we'll see if the show does anything about it, but I think it's definitely a worthwhile thing to notice.
Yeah. Kind of funny. So that's my recap of Rooster Fighter this week. Very action-packed episode. Kind of a very, I think, solitary episode insofar as, like, just another Monster of the Week type situation. I mean, we do learn a little bit maybe about a little more about the nature of the monsters, but not too much. It's more just like a self-contained little bit. And, like, I guess we learned a little bit more about the world. But aside from that, it was just sort of a, like, you know, enemy of the week type episode.
Yeah, I agree. But I think it's kind of good to have one of those, you know, relative early in the first part of the series. So,
yeah.
But one thing I wanted to add just quickly, and you could debate how much Keiji was being serious or not, but we mentioned how Keiji was taking his rage about being cock-blocked against Say's father. But after he walked away and finished, he made a point of saying, did that in part to test Say's father, and that if he wasn't the type of man who would have, like, protected his son, he wasn't the type of man who's going to be worth a damn. So, like, he says he kind of did the whole thing to them, trying to, like, get him to basically turn a new leaf, we talked about. But this could be, like, was he always planning to do that, or was he just pissed, and then he, like, retroactively justify that in that sense to Elizabeth, make himself sound better? Hard to say, but at least that's what the rationale he stated after the fact.
Yeah, to me it came across that he was, like, genuinely pissed and, like, taking it out on him. I don't think that was his original plan, was I'm gonna, you know, give him a lesson. But that's what he, that's, yeah, that's how he justified it, I guess.
I think you could debate it. I think it could go either way, honestly. Yeah. But I thought
I'll tell you my feeling on it is that I also feel that Keiji is stubborn and selfish to a fault, but also kind-hearted. But I think in that moment, he was just being selfish.
Yeah, I think totally fair, like, read of that situation. I think it could go either way, but yeah.
All right. So that's Rooster Fighter. Let's move on to Don to Don. Don to Don, Season 2, Episode 2, The Evil Eye. By the way, before I begin, I just want to say this was a fantastic episode. Okay, so Okaroon and Momo are still going crazy in that like house, and they're trying to kill themselves. They're like trying to commit suicide.
I forget what Momo says, or is it Okaroon says, but it's something like, let me just end it or something.
Yeah.
And it, Gigi, like that, it immediately reminds him that his parents said the exact same thing. And he realizes,
let me die or something like that.
Let me die. Yeah. That phrase, it actually comes up, I think, a few times in the episode. Gigi immediately realizes, oh, this is basically what happened to my, what was with my parents. And it shows like a flashback of his parents, I think, like trying to hang themselves in the window, and he actually cut them down, like save them. And then later in the episode, we see a bunch more of examples of this effect of this, yep, basically this phenomenon. It gets pretty complex that causes the these people to want to kill themselves. Yeah,
it's a Mongolian death warp, quote unquote. You see that in the extended flashback. Yeah.
Did we know this?
Know what?
Were we aware that Gigi's parents had tried to kill themselves until this moment?
They said, sorry, you're more knowledgeable about this than me, but if I remember the last season correctly, which, you know, was several months ago, they did say that his parents were kind of like affected somehow by the house, they thought. Like they were like the house curse or whatever was affecting his parents, but I don't know if we specifically knew, like it made them suicidal.
I don't think they mentioned that his parents were suicidal or not. I can't recall that. But I do know that you recall that there are a bunch of mediums that came to the house, and then Gigi was telling that story and how they all killed themselves.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, okay. Well, like Seda says, this does get us to the flashback where Gigi realizes it's like this is something similar that happened to his parents. We even see like later or shortly that like the bad guys, what are their names? The Kitos.
Yeah,
they were like worshiping the, you know, and kind of helping this to happen, right? Because they're clearly bad.
Making sacrifices to protect the village is what they thought they were doing.
Right. You know, but they're evil in my eye.
Oh, yeah.
Well, pun intended.
They thought they were doing the right thing in terms of like sacrificing, but like, I mean, obviously that's not a good like means.
It's
to the
so
end,
hilariously like, over the top evil, but yeah, they were thinking themselves as the good guys, so to speak, but they're obviously committing atrocities.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I've seen nicer bad guys wanting to be good guys than these guys. These guys are kind of assholes. I'm sorry. Anyway. So Gigi runs around. He's trying to save them from the death worm attacking. At the same time, they're still trying to kill themselves. He's trying to juggle them. It's just like this real mess for him. Things are really, really bad. And then there's like a moment where like Momo and Okaroon kind of get their faculties back. And I don't remember why.
Evil Eye comes in and cancels out the death worms.
Oh, that's right.
And worms waves or something with its own waves.
So we see the evil eye is a very scrawny man with this creepy face. Yeah, I think it's Turbo Granny that explains that like they both have this ability and they're shooting at each other and they're like canceling each other out. Okaroon, like Momo's like, okay, Okaroon, now's your chance, you know, try attacking.
Yeah, Okaroon kind of missiles himself, cuts off the head of the worm, but he just grows another one.
Yeah, it's gross. And then we get this, the backstory of the evil eye.
Yeah, basically, I would just mention Evil Eyes been communicating with Gigi kind of subconsciously. Like, we recall the Evil Eye made an appearance last season that Gigi was kind of like dreaming about someone or something, and it was like the Evil Eye. The Evil Eyes had its eye, so to speak, on Gigi for a while, and so it kind of lures Gigi to the bottom of the wherever the fuck they are. It's like a collection of like old houses built on top of each other, but like at the very bottom is the corpse of the human that used to be the Evil Eye. And of course, it lures Gigi there, and then eventually get into its sad flashback.
Yeah, and they actually, I forget if this is Turbo Granny you mentioned this, probably, but I actually remember us last season talking about like the episode when Gigi was introduced. We actually like noted at the time, like, Momo's grandma keeps calling him genius. Like, that's kind of odd.
Oh yeah.
Like she just keeps calling him genius. And at the time it kind of just felt maybe a little bit like a joke or weird or whatever.
Like a nickname.
Like, yeah. No, okay.
It came off as that she was, since Gigi was saying nice things about her, she was like, oh, look at this kid. He's so smart. He's been complimenting me.
Yeah. Yeah, like right, like praising.
I took it in that moment that it was like she was just complimenting him because he was so smart, like he was so like sweet to her, and he's like, yeah, he's a genius. But we learn in this episode, of course, later that there's more to it than that.
Yeah, that basically that Gigi has this magic capability or this spiritual like aptitude, I suppose, that gives him this ability, which is why this Evil Eye kind of attached to himself.
Gigi himself is not really aware of it. So but like obviously Seiko
like a potential can tell, or an
and
aptitude.
Then the Evil Eye could tell and Purple Granny can tell, but yeah, not Gigi himself really, but
and yeah, so while he's on his way down to the basement area where the body of the Evil Eye is, you know, he's kind of witnessing the Evil Eye's flashback as he's going down there. He gets more of it when he's closer to it, but that's what's leading him down there is And it's a very sad story about this child that was locked up and just wanted to play with the children outside. Of course, it was a sacrifice. Like it was something that was going to be sacrificed as part of the ritual. I will say this was very confusing to me because I get this impression that the Evil Eye is very, very, very old, but then I'm not sure it is that old.
It'll be like a few hundred, I think, because the people's mentioned... Oh, no, the Evil Eye, when he died, was a child, but it's been around for, like, about, I think, 200 years, because I remember
that's what I'm getting at. So 200 years, yeah.
Yeah, it was a few generations, not, like, a millennia, but...
You know what it is? I think what it was that there's a shot in this episode where we see the Kitos, like, doing a ceremony, a prayer thing, and I thought they were there with him, and I'm like, well, wait, they can't be 200 years old, but I think it was just me confused or something, so... Or maybe they are old. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. It was confusing. Okay.
Let's put a pin on that and come back to it later episode.
All right. Well, that's interesting. It actually kind of makes me, that's where I was leading, actually. I was like, are they special? I don't know. We'll see.
I think someone even remarked that the leader of the Kito is like, hey, it's her somewhere in this flashback. Like,
they also look weird. I said that like last episode. They're all like gray.
They have weird body proportions and they're gray. And yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So the sad story, it's really great. The way it's done is really, really great. This reminds me a lot of like the silky backstory, very, very much, both in the emotional beats of it, as well as just like the very amazing animation. By the way, this show looked great this week, like throughout, but especially this sequence where we see this backstory and they kind of change art styles and animation styles throughout it.
And the animation win at this point. So Gigi kind of feels, you know, sympathy for the Evil Eye, for the kid. And he wants to basically offer the metaphorical olive branch. Like, hey, let's just, you know, I want to help however I can. And then Turbo Granny's like, no, don't. Turbo Granny's warning him. Momo's kind of in the way. But then ultimately, this little conflict, the Evil Eye possesses Gigi. And the animation during this like possession is also very good.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You're right to point out that Turbo Granny is like, no, don't look it in the eye and all this stuff. And also like, it's evil and he's evil. And Gigi's like, no. And at this point I'm with him and I'm still kind of with him. But Gigi's like, no, I've seen his backstory, you know, and he's suffered and, you know, he deserves a friend and, you know, he just wants to be happy. But in this, insofar as in the moment, right now, but before, by the end of this episode, Turbo Granny is correct, because she explains, this is where we learn that, yeah, Gigi is a genius. He didn't even know it, but he has great psychic ability. It's exactly also, the kind of
Turbo
vessel
Granny
that
mentions that he's super buff, basically, or like, you notice in an early episode, he's like carrying two people and like,
yeah,
jumping and flipping and dipping. He's like really athletic.
Yeah, his shirt came off and he has like a full 10 pack. He's pretty ripped.
He's got a perfect physical body. He's got incredible psychic ability. Like, he's like the perfect vessel. And Turbo Granny says as much. He's like, this is exactly the kind of person that the evil eye would want to inhabit. And this is what happens. So the evil eye does take over Gigi's body and isn't nice. And immediately, like, because it hates humans. It hates all humans for everything that it did to him. And so it wants revenge. And it starts just attacking Momo right out of the gate, just immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of slams Momo against the wall, but then it starts attacking the worm. So right. It's kind of just, you know, has like a fury against everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a helping out of. Yeah.
Yeah. There's kind of this conflict between like Gigi and Turbo Granny for a moment where there's like, I want to help the kid. No, don't. You don't help him. But I don't think neither are necessarily right. You know, obviously the kid is tormented or was tormented.
Well, Gigi's like a sweet, innocent, fluffy bun who can't say no to anyone. And Turbo Granny is like the cynical, thousand-year-old demon who has like no
self-preservation. Trumps everything. So, like, I don't care if he was tortured. He's not. Don't help him. Might hurt you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to make a prediction. Obviously, don't say anything if you know. But my prediction is that I think it's going to be very similar to what happened with the. With the Silky in that.
Yeah, like he gained some sort of control over it.
Yeah, or they make a deal or something, and eventually it's going to like not be as evil as it is now. But right now it's just full on revenge mode. And yeah. It does attack the worm, kind of, you know, does real damage to it, and then starts to attack Momo. Momo is starting to feel somewhat defenseless in this moment, and then when, at the very final end moment of the episode, Okaroon arrives and blocks the attack kick to kick with Gigi and the evil eye. And that's where the episode ends. So yeah. Thoughts?
Good episode, I thought.
Yep.
Agreed.
It's just, you know, Dandadan doing its thing with its One Piece style flashbacks, crazy action and animation, good fights, you know, good lore dumps, just the whole shebang. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think in the last episode, I wasn't really feeling it so much about this whole like worm thing and being like, what's going on here? I don't know what's going on here. But now it's kind of coming together, and I'm really liking it a lot. And the animation in this episode is just so great, and I like when, you know, there's a formula here that we're sensing, but I do like this formula of these yokai. You know, redemptions that are kind of going on. I think it's good. All right. So another great episode of Dandadan this week. I think next week we're going to find out. I know that you said this arc is very long, so I don't think I'm expecting the end anytime soon, but I think it's, you know, we're getting closer to that.
Well, yeah, now we have a couple of things to take care of. We have a worm and we have a evil eye possessed Gigi.
You know what I was thinking too, right before we continue, like Ira didn't come with them, right?
No.
Okay.
No, she's not.
So, she's just not available. She's just not in this arc. Or
I guess not. Whatever. Yeah. I just saw her in the opening. And I was thinking to myself, like, where is she at? I guess.
Oh
she
yeah,
just
I mean, she'll be around this season. She does some stuff. Don't worry about that. But she's just not around for right now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on then to Blue Lock. Blue Lock, Episode 9, Awakening. This episode's all about awakenings. Because in this world, soccer is not just a game. It's a state of mind.
A world where soccer is everything.
All right. So the battle between Team Z and Team V continues, and Nagi ends up getting another goal. He's just too strong. Team Z can't do anything to stop them. But it's not just Nagi, the white-haired kid. It's all of Team V. They're all just really great.
Yeah, the glasses kid scores. I think his name is Zansetsu. And apparently his gimmick is that...
Just the only ones with unique character designs.
Yeah. Well, true. Like, I would say like 3 or 4 out of the 11.
Yeah, there's basically the three characters. There's Nagi, Zansetsu, I think is his name, and then like Ryo?
Ryo.
One kind of small thing that kind of appears in this episode, maybe it was in previous episodes that I didn't pick up on it, is the glasses kid like tries to pretend that he's smart, but he's actually like incredibly dumb.
No, that came up when we first saw him in the introduction when we were talking to the traitor whose name I'm blanking on.
Yeah, I must have missed the first time it came up, but like in this episode, they really hammer home like, oh, he mispronounces words all the time and is actually kind of an idiot. So,
but he's also very fast. He's kind of the redhead kid's sort of nemesis in this episode.
Yeah.
I like to consider it like, what do you call it? He's Toad and Chidori's Bowser because the glasses guy has high acceleration, but Chidori has higher top speed.
Yeah, that's basically Chigiri's kind of his final goal, like literally the end of the episode, if we jump to that, is that if he can reach his top speed, he can win.
Yeah.
Even though the other guy has better acceleration.
Well, at this point in the battle, Team V is just dusting Team Z. They end up scoring a second time, so now they're really far ahead, 3-0. But in this moment, Isagi looks over and he just sees Bachira and he's just grinning.
Yeah, Bachira goes nuts.
Yeah, he's going nuts. He's psyched.
His game plans just go apeshit.
He gets a hold of the ball and just starts going down the field, and it's crazy. And he's like, my monster is telling me to do this, and it's crazy. You know, he just loves this. And basically what he's saying is he tells Isagi that his monster is telling him that he needs to push himself to new limits, and that this kind of situation, this is kind of his thing, that Bachira is kind of blasé all the time and bored, but when he gets put into a corner, that's when his like power comes out, basically.
Yeah, he kind of is very, he goes by like instinct or whatever. Like he didn't plan any of this. This isn't well thought out. He's just like, let me just do what comes to mind and do whatever I feel like, and then I'll score.
Yes. And this sort of kind of inspires Isagi to kind of do something of the same. He's like, I need to do this something similar. I need to like step up, basically. We get the commercial break, a very early commercial break. And when we come back, I wrote down that Team Z has awakened and that they start evolving. And they're suddenly just starting to do really good. And they get yet another hat goal.
I wrote down the second goal was scored by the orange-haired guy, who's basically like the muscle guy.
Yeah, yeah. He scored outside of his typical range. And so
yeah.
I think the whole team was like, was despondent when they went down 3 goals. But after Bachiro's kind of apeshittery and then the orange head guy's goal, they kind of pumped themselves back up and they just turned it like they recycled themselves back up and are now in the game, so to speak.
Yeah. And they're basically like, they're like evolving their like ability, their specialty or whatever. So like Batra's is dribbling and the big guy's is like just his power and muscle and whatever. And there's actually a scene here with Ego and Henri kind of watching the match.
Mm-hmm.
Henri even says something like, it's turning out how you predicted. Like, yes, this is all going to plan.
No, she was actually about to say, did you catch it?
No, yes, I did. I was about to say that. But the first thing she says is, wow, everything is going as you predicted, Ego. Like, Ego, this is exactly what he planned. And then Ego mentioned something like, this is their awakening, blah, blah, blah. And then Henri is like, you mean kind of going like Super Saiyan? And he's like, he kind of cuts her off, or maybe she cuts herself off, but she doesn't actually say it, but basically saying you're going Super Saiyan.
I think he got a page from the lawyer to tell him to cut that out or something. But yeah, he cuts her off.
This was a Jump manga though, right?
Was it?
I thought it was.
I have no idea. Maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, I was joking. Like, I don't know. Obviously, no one's paging him.
No. I'm just curious. I was just thinking in that moment that it was, because not that it matters. I was just curious. Anyway.
But she literally says, like, Super Say, and then pauses. Doesn't say the whole thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so now it's 3-2, because they've got 2 goals in that first half. And now at halftime, Isagi's kind of pondering. This is all happening just before what you just described. But anyway, he's like, you know, it's like, I gotta be able to do this better, and you know, whatever. What's my What's my awakening? What's my formula going to be? Blah, blah, blah. Back in the game, Isagi gets the ball, but he can't still figure out what to do. And in this moment, Nagi's kind of running alongside him, and he's kind of taunting Isagi in this moment. He's like, why are you even trying? You're just going to lose. There's no point in it, really. Not to be mean. He's just kind of in his blasé way, being like, I don't get you. Like, why do you try so hard? It's not worth it. You know, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, his whole like life philosophy is do what comes easy. And he's like, this is clearly not coming easy to you.
Yeah, it's like, I could just so easily beat you. Why? And you're so weak. Why do you play? I don't get it. That's what he's saying. Then we get the scene, like you said, with Ego and Henri. And he's just explaining what awakenings are and all that stuff. Bakugo, you know, I call him Bakugo.
Pretty much.
I mean, that's a totally fine way to go about it. Like, who doesn't? Everyone, he looks like just like him, right? So everything, there's just a Bakugo archetype now. It's just
yeah, he's the Bakugo. The Bakugo is getting kind of, you know, they're doing well. You know, again, Team Z is kind of handling the ball better now. They have more confidence, and the Bakugo character is kind of giving Ryo some shit, and they're kind of like. Nagi is not really doing that great now either, because they're kind of figuring out that when they can kind of get Ryo away from Nagi and get him to not give Nagi instructions, that Nagi can't really do much. And the Bakugo guy is like, yeah, see, you're without your little helper guy, you're not that tough, are you? Ha ha ha, you're a piece of shit. And then the Ryo guy gets so mad, he actually ends up like hitting the Bakugo guy and getting like a yellow flag or whatever.
A yellow card, but that was honestly, I think, a red card tier foul. He elbowed him in the throat. Like that, I think that's been.
Yeah, like that was actually like an assaulting attack, not just a misplaced, you know, hand or foul. So,
but he is right. We do see that Nagi is kind of standing over nearby, and he's not really doing anything. And that's kind of the problem, is that without Ryo to tell him what to do, Nagi's not committed to any of this, and so he's just kind of standing around, looking around, not really sure what he's supposed to do. He doesn't really care. That's the problem.
A slight part of this that I think is very mildly amusing is earlier in the episode, Bakugo is like, why am I always on defense? And because he just wants to score, right? But now he's kind of like relishing it, like, oh, yes. I'm just gonna bully this guy this whole time because it's fun. So,
and he's good at it too. Like, I mean, to be fair to the Bakugo guy, he's good at defending. So it's working. the final moment of this episode is that while all this is happening, it's the final bit is with the red hair guy and the glasses guy.
This is what we mentioned earlier with like glasses guy is can accelerate fast, but I'm faster when at top speed. So he kind of, his plan is like kick the ball to myself. I can run to it faster than he can run to it. And so I can reach it. So.
I think just extend how much they have to do, because eventually his top speed will take over.
Yep. He gets the goal, and now the episode ends and is tied 3-3. But I don't think the match is over.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Yeah, we still have more match to go. I'm still predicting that Kuon is going to do something. Maybe not.
They end the episode with the camera closing up on Kuon.
Yeah.
But okay.
He has to do something eventually. I don't think they end the episode like that.
I just think it'd be kind of a weird plot movement if they literally win 10 people against 11 and Kuon literally does nothing. And then it's like, well, this problem is still lingering. I feel like they have to do something with that.
Yeah.
Which I think they'll do the obvious thing where I think I might be wrong. Maybe they'll surprise me, but I think they'll do the obvious thing where Kuon, you know, saves the day somehow. Maybe doesn't make the final goal or whatever, but does something that gets him back onto the team.
My recollection is they'd have to win this match, right? They can't tie. They have to win, right?
Yeah.
That was going to ask that. That was my next thing I was going to wonder. They do have to beat them.
Yeah, they said the way that the scores line up, they have to win.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's very likely as well, Seda. I think that we're going to see Kuon do something to redeem himself somewhat. Because, yeah, I kind of forgot he was even there. So there you go. There's Blue Lock. The game with Team Z continues. It's all right. I'm not hating it or anything. I'm just sort of like, okay, cool.
Yeah, I think we've said several episodes in a row, like, I probably wouldn't be watching the show otherwise, but when it comes on in the block, I will watch it I'm not like off put by it. It's just like, yeah, it's okay.
I agree. I think there's been worse shows on Toonami. I don't want to paint this as like me being negative or so overly negative. I think like it's fine. Like it's a fine show. I'm okay with it. I don't think it's a very good show, but I also feel like it's fun enough to watch in a group setting. And I think that it is kind of like cheesy in a way that is somewhat enjoyable. Cause like, especially when you get wacky characters like Ego and Bachira out there, that those are kind of fun to watch, but they're not, this show isn't going to be like my favorite show of the year.
I've seen some people mention that like season two of Blue Lock, which I know we're quite a ways away from that, if that happens, is apparently like bad. Like,
I think the apparently it might like get the to the art or just the animation garbage.
So maybe it does reach the point where it actually does become like off-putting, where it's like, I don't want to watch this.
Well, again, I hate to make this comparison, but I'll do it once more. That's very similar to what happened with Food Wars, where
that's true.
It, you know, although I still find Food Wars way more entertaining and the characters way more endearing.
I would say the production for Food Wars diminished over time, but it actually kind of did jump the shark in the last season. So Blue Lock, it's still going to be surprised if it's just the production that gets worse or if the narrative and characters also get worse too in a meaningful way.
Yeah, I guess we don't know that yet. But if, in the very least, they do share the sort of production quality going down aspect. All right, anything else about Blue Lock before we continue? What is there to say?
No.
It's soccer.
I like the last thing I'll mention is they're really hyping up this Nagi character as like an absolute genius. And they're like, he's the highest rank in our category. And he's like ranked 220. Like there's a lot of like, if this guy is this unbelievable talent, and I know they're kind of they've already put some chinks in the armor, right, about like his shortcomings. But yeah, we have a lot of room for better soccer geniuses or whatever.
Yeah, someone like players who actually give a damn and are talented. Yeah. That'll be interesting combination. You expect that to be the minimum, but
what does having a yellow card mean?
If you get two yellow cards, you're ejected from the game. If you get one red card, you're like, so you get two yellow cards for like transgressions of a certain like degree. And if you get two yellow cards that equals a one red card, then you're ejected from the game. You can't play anymore. And obviously, if you keep accumulating yellow cards, red cards, like you might get fines and demerits from the league and whatnot. But in terms of the near term, you can get two yellow cards or one red card, because two yellow cards equals one red card. If you get any of those combinations, you're ejected from the game. Can't play anymore for the rest of the game.
I wonder if that means ejection from Blue Lock or just that match.
I mean, it should just be from that match, but obviously Blue Lock has wacky rules, so who knows?
Rules, yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, let's move on then to Tokyo Revengers. All right. Crocodile's got to head out. We will talk to you again next week. Thanks, man. Tokyo Revengers, Episode 9, Revolt. So, blah, 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 blah. So we, Takamichi finally catches up to where we get like a long recap. Yeah, like a One Piece recap.
Yeah, there's like the first 5 minutes of this episode are basically like the trailing 5 minutes of the previous episode. So,
yeah,
we get to see all that again.
So him and the motorcycle guy who was named, I didn't write it down.
I wrote down Mitsuya. Okay. Something like that. I might have misheard it. They do mention later that he is the captain of the second division. So it's like, oh, I guess he's pretty important, assuming if Mikey is the captain of the first division.
By the end of this episode, we see like six division captains.
Oh, yeah.
But he's one of them, like, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're skipping ahead here. But yeah, they kind of introduce five more characters with unique designs. And I kind of wrote them down. Buzz cut, cotton head, long hair, blonde hair, you know, like I'm assuming these guys are important.
The cotton hair one's the one that really stood out to me. He was like the crazy guy that
I think that was I think voiced by Bryce Papenbrook kind of.
Oh, was he? I didn't even notice.
Maybe, but okay. Yeah.
Anyway, that guy, the motorcycle guy, is helping Takemichi, and then Takemichi kind of remembers, oh wait, they said it happened in a parking lot, and he's like, they're heading to the wrong parking lot, so they divert, ends up getting into that parking lot, and they catch it. We see that Draken is there, and he ends up being hit and punched by members of Mobius, who are being led by this character named Pe, who is the friend of Pa.
Friend.
That's when Takemichi arrives. But when he arrives, you know, you're kind of expecting that Draken's going to be down on the ground and bleeding, but actually Draken has already beat up like half of the Mobius people. But he's in bad shape. He's like, he is now bleeding and is like all like.
Yeah. And I think he even kind of like wobbles a little bit, like, you know, losing his stance, but he's still alive at this point.
Yeah. And, all of the Mobius guys are like, ah, it's going to be like 20 of us versus 4 of you. Get ready to get your ass kicked. But that's when you hear the rumble of a motorcycle, and it's Mikey. He comes running. I guess all of the Tomon guys just ride motorcycles, I guess. I didn't even really think of that.
How old do you have to be to ride a motorcycle? I mean, I guess if they're...
Well, it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah, they can just do whatever they want. But
they do whatever they want, yeah. It looks like it'd be hard for Mikey to reach the pedals, but anyway. He comes up, and he comes riding up to help. And he faces off against this new character named Hanma, who is the mastermind behind this whole thing, who kind of
I think this guy is in the opening. I think a handful of these characters are in the opening. I have to
now. Here's the thing, though. This isn't the guy we thought was the bad guy, though.
No, this guy is like brand new.
Right.
I'm pretty sure this guy has not been shown before, at least not significantly. So this is like a new introduction to a new character. And I think some characters in the show are like, who is this guy? Like, no one knows who he is. Or I think Takemichi even says, like, Naota didn't say anything about this person. Like, I don't know who this is.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, I was so expecting, you know, this other, like, bad Tomon guy to come forward here, but that didn't happen.
Right. No.
And so, yeah, interesting. I'm sure it'll happen eventually, but... in this moment, they think it's this guy, this Hanma guy. I'm the mastermind behind, you know, tricking Pe into siding with Mobius and to get revenge. And this guy's strong. And, you know, Mikey starts to try to hit him, but then this Hanma guy kind of blocks his kick. And everybody's like, whoa, nobody's able to block Mikey's kick. And suddenly it looks like things are going to go bad for them because this Hanma guy is really cocky. But then they hear a bunch of motorcycles. And, of course, comes riding up as the remainder of Tomon. All of Tomon is now there.
So there's a bunch of characters here that I'm assuming will be introduced to over time.
Yeah.
I think I counted there are 5 characters that they kind of like kept going back to. I don't think they gave any of their names. Did it give like little like introduction text or no?
I don't know. I think it was more, well, I don't remember. I just remember, I think they were talking to each other and they were like,
yeah, they might have mentioned that, dropped a few names here and there, but they haven't been like formally introduced.
No.
Like, hi, I am so-and-so. But yeah, there's like a guy with like a buzz cut, kind of like no sideburns. There's like pure top buzz cut. There's a guy with the cotton head, long black hair, like really short blue hair, and then like a blonde hair, kind of normal hair guy. So there's like 5 of them. So... And they show up in like the fight. They show them in clips here and there doing abilities or whatever.
And like I said, like the big cotton bushy afro looking haired guy is like, he's crazy and just going nuts. And he's like, I love this. And he's just beating everybody down. And so we get just full on gang warfare here. It's just like, that's where right before the commercial break, it's just the big battle has begun. When we come back, the battle is going on, but Takemichi's still worried. He's worried that Kiyomasa he hasn't found Kiyomasa yet, and he knows that Kiyomasa is still trying to kill Draken. So he's running around trying to find, not really running, he's stumbling around trying to find Draken. And he's just sort of falling over people, and people are bumping into him and stuff. But before anything that happens with that, Mikey finally just walks up to Pe, and instead of like attacking Pe, or getting mad, and he kind of like forgives him and says, hey, you know, why are you feeling this way? You know, you're a part of our family. I don't want you to be like that. If you're mad, instead of siding with Mobius, why don't you just hit me? just hit me instead. And he tries to like give him this opportunity to punch Mikey. Because yeah, Mikey's a good guy.
Yeah, and Mikey even kind of says, like, you know, I haven't smiled once since that happened. Like, I don't take any joy in this. This is really, really hard. So we talked about this before, that Mikey, he's got a little bit more depth to him than just like, I'm the boss of the gang, you know, strong arm type person.
Right. So. Yeah, it is strange. I mean, it's something I like about the show, but it's also something, I mean, I still struggle a little bit with the show because I just don't like the thug archetype.
Yeah,
but I do like the way they're doing the Mikey and Draken characters, because like if in so far as that, like when you compare them to almost every other thug in the show, like they are good characters, because like the rest of them are just generic. You know what I mean? They're just exactly the kind of characters I don't like, where it's just like this Hanma guy, like he's just evil because he's evil. And, you know, he's just, I don't know, thinks he's hot shit or whatever. But at least Mikey and Draken care about the guys that are under them and they're trying to be good.
And also Mikey and Draken are not like overly gimmicky. Like I feel like some of these other Tokyo Manji like captains, I guess, might be. I mean, granted, we were like just introduced to them, so
yeah, I think they will be. But like Pa was, like he was very much that too. Mm-hmm. And also like another thing too is like Hanma, like again, it's kind of like bad guy trope to done too far, where he's just like, he literally took back to his guys, like, if any of you idiots try to run away, you know, I'll beat your ass myself. And it's like, okay, like
yeah,
that's the he's kind of like not why a, are he's you not in this a very
yeah, he's not a very compelling villain at this point, because he just sort of like came up out of nowhere and he's just like, I'm evil. Okay.
Yeah. But also if this is the kind of character you typically see in this archetype, where it's like, you work under me, and if you don't do what I say, I'll beat your ass. And whenever I hear that, I just think about these characters, like these no names, and I'm just like, why don't you just leave? Like, why put up with this?
What do you get out? What do you get from this?
Yeah, really. You don't get anything. You get your ass handed to you and told what to do. Like, just leave. Anyway. Anyway, so after the scene with Mikey and Peh, which, by the way, Peh is just a dumb name. I don't
even know. Yeah, I think it's Pa and Peh. It's like, oh, I get it. They're like a duo.
I guess.
Maybe you could imply there's more to it than that, because Peh even says, like, Pa means everything to me. Like,
yeah.
Do friends say that? But I don't know. But like the fact that they have like similar names and they're best friends or more, it's like, okay, that's a little bit goofy.
I guess that's probably not his real name. It's probably just like a gang name. Maybe. Or something. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Well, anyway.
I mean, Mikey is not his real name. I forget what it is, but.
Oh, that's right. I think you're right.
And I guess Draken's not his name either. They're
definitely not. No, because that's the thing. I have to keep reminding myself this. Mikey never calls him Draken.
Yeah, it's Kenny or something like that.
Kenny. He calls him Kenny. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's like Kenichi or something. By the way, I quickly like was looking up, like I went to the, I don't think I spoiled myself, but I went to like the, there's wikis for all this stuff, right? Like Tokyo Avengers wiki, like who are the characters in Tokyo Manji? But it's like, I don't recognize most of these characters. And I'm like, this is like up to date, like, four arcs from now. Like this probably isn't useful to me now, because I'm assuming characters move or die or retire or whatever. Like I don't know, but like I tried looking it up. Like this is not worth it. Like it's if you try like looking up like who are the members of the Tokyo Manji gang, it's like as of 40 episodes from now, so or whatever. So don't, not worth it.
Well, in the final scene, again, Takemichi's running around. He ends up. He's looking for Draken. He's really worried. And then he does bump into the shoulder of Kiyomasa. And he's like, oh, there's Kiyomasa. I can stop him before he does any damage. But then he looks down and sees that Kiyomasa has a dripping blade in his hand. And you hear him say, it's done, or something like that. And
Takemichi sees Draken on the ground. His eyes, I think, are white. And literally like bleeding out. Like it does not seem promising that he's still alive. Like he looks pretty dead.
Yeah, it looks like it might be over. And so he cries out, and that's where the episode ends. So you failed again, Takemichi.
And the way that time travel works in this plot, you can't go back from this.
Nope.
So this is might be a done deal unless there's some twist I'm not expecting.
Yeah, either he did enough in the battle to save him from dying completely and he'll just be in the hospital, or he's dead.
Yeah.
So we'll
because see, the I way guess. We've established he goes exactly like 12 years in the past or whatever. So he can't go before this point to redo it. The time travel doesn't work that way.
Yep. I'm not trying to rag too much on Takemichi here, but like all he had to do was find him. And I get there are like 50 guys there, but I'm sorry, I don't think it would take you that long.
Yeah, especially when Draken is like the tallest one.
Right. And so, then like, I mean, he just kept falling under people and I was like, I don't know, yeah, maybe like he's a little winded clumsy from running.
Yeah.
But like, come on, dude. Seriously.
Like it's like a, I don't know, they're like in like a parking lot, right? They even say they're in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Like not, it's not like a football field. It's not that big. And Draken is really tall. I don't know. It's a little bit hard to, you know, suspend my disbelief.
I am having a hard time because I just feel like the moment he saw Draken, all you have to do is yell out, Kiyomasa is coming to kill you. He didn't even do that. So anyway. So that's this episode of Tokyo Revengers. We get to big gang warfare fight. So, I mean, the other thing I think is worth mentioning about this is that, you know, we keep getting these flash forwards to flashbacks, I guess, technically, but whatever, to when they were being when he was being explained about what happened and about the fact that there was this big fight. And it's like, I don't think anything has changed.
Yeah. Well, I think Takemichi, in some of his monologues to himself, might mention like things that are slightly different, where it's like,
oh, that's true.
Where it's, oh, like,
no, that's what it was. It was Hanma. He's like, I don't remember Hanma being here.
Yeah.
Have I changed it? Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I think before it was like purely, I think the way it was implied before, it was like purely like a civil war in the Tokyo Manji. And now it's like more than that. Like it almost like it escalated to this like both kind of like Tokyo Manji infighting as well as this Mobius connection. I might be getting some of the details wrong.
No,
but yeah,
you're right. I kind of forgot about this. You're right. I think I was too quick to judge there. Things are playing out differently.
Yeah, but the outcome of there's a really brief scene where he's like, I don't want to see Akun die again or Hina. Like he didn't.
I hate that.
The order was kind of weird that he mentioned Akun first, but I kind of think though that he actually saw Akun jump off the building, where he never saw Hina die.
Yeah, I still didn't like that though.
Yeah, so but it's just like that visual. That's the way I reconcile it. Is like he has this visual memory of seeing his best friend kill himself that he obviously doesn't want to see ever again. But right. Like Hina is, of course, his like girlfriend, like literally his girlfriend, like got to save her too.
He just saw her like 10 minutes ago too. I don't know. It bothered me. I'm just gonna be honest. It bothered me when he said Akun and then said her name. And I'm like, dude, get your priorities straight. I'm sorry.
Also, weird. I'm trying to think of I'm thinking of things from Hina's perspective. She stayed at the tree that Takemichi left with the phone call. Then she followed him, found him tied up, kissed him, unfreed him, and then Takemichi ran off again. And then she like went back to the tree, and then later she sees Takemichi and the other guy, Mitsuya or whatever, like run in the other direction, and she's like there. Like, what's she doing there? What are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't know.
One last thing about this. Again, I'm just going to nitpick a little. A couple episodes ago, it was made somewhat clear to us that like she had noticed there was the difference between the Takemichi mind of the future and then the current Takemichi, who was like still doing debauchery and other things.
Yeah.
And she hasn't really mentioned that since.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, I was thinking about it during this episode. I'm like, I know he's been there for a while now, but in the past, in this most recent stint. But I'm just thinking, like, when he leaves again, is he just going to turn back into his old idiot self? Like, does his former self know what his future self did in his body?
He seems to keep forgetting.
I think he may be forgetting.
Even in like the first episode, he was like, "Oh yeah, these are my friends." Like, you forgot your friends. I mean, I don't remember all my.
Well, no, that's the other way around, though. I'm saying, okay. Here in very shortly, I don't know if it's the next episode or what.
I see what you mean. If he jumps back to the future, does his past self remember what he was just doing? How does he perceive that? Okay.
Like, does his past self know that he kissed his girlfriend?
Yeah. Or does he maybe he remembers that, but has like a different like perspective on it?
Or does like, he just like, I've been, I just woke up more here immature and it's been a week. I mean, I don't, they need to explain that because I don't get it.
Okay. We'll see.
All right. Any other thoughts about Tokyo Revengers? Because I am kind of like,
I know this is maybe an overdone analogy, but it feels like a mixed bag where it's like, there are parts of it that I think are like, I see what they're doing with this, and this is mildly interesting, but then there are parts of it, it's like, I can't believe this is how you're moving the plot along. Like, this is how, you know, this is the conflict that you've decided to have, having this like villain character come out of nowhere, other things we talked about. And so,
I don't hate Takemichi, but I don't like him that much. I think he means well, but I think that he is failing as a protagonist. And
I guess he has room to grow.
Maybe, but positively. I know that's his character. Like, his whole character is like, he's the crybaby. He's the guy who cares more about others, and he just always breaks down into crying and stuff. Like, that's his thing. He's the weeping thug, I guess. But I don't know. He keeps making bad calls, and he keeps like not being able to do the basic things that make me get frustrated. So I don't like him that much compared to like Mikey and Draken are more interesting characters because they're capable and they have a heart. Takemichi has a heart, but he's also like not doing very good. He's kind of like, I guess he has to not do well for the story, but I don't know. It's frustrating sometimes because, again, I feel like there were so many opportunities in this episode that he could have prevented the stabbing. And
it's literally just his own, I guess, incompetence that allowed him to fail again.
Yeah, especially I understood earlier when he got beat up, like he was one guy and he's weak and there's all these huge guys. I get that. That makes sense. Those guys are going to bully him and beat him up and tape him up. Fine. He is not super physically strong, but he was standing there with like three other super strong Tomon guys. And then the rest of Tomon shows up and I'm like, there's nothing preventing him at this point from saving Draken, but he still fails to get there just because I guess he's lost. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. He's somehow like, even if it's kind of cheesy, I would have maybe here's a little bit of fan fiction. Like, what if he got like attacked by one of the Mobius guys for some reason, I don't know, like someone distracted him or punched him or knocked him out or something, right? But no, that didn't happen. He just like, oh no, I lost control, I lost sight of Draken, where is he? He died. And it's just like, oh, good job, you had one job.
Yeah, I could have taken it even a step further and be like a big, like one of the strong captains of Mobius comes at him and he's got to like man up and be like, I've got to beat this guy in order to get to Draken. And it's like, he gets some character growth in that moment. We don't get anything like that.
Yeah. He just literally like, he doesn't really get attacked. He just kind of stumbles around and then fails. Like good job.
All right. So that's Tokyo Revengers for this week, The Revolt. So let's move on to the final premiere this week, One Piece. One Piece, episode 771. A vow between two men, Luffy and Kozuki Momonosuke. So not a whole lot happens in this episode.
Yeah. The first part of the episode, they kind of mentioned this. They're talking, there's a, the episode opens with like with a recap, like One Piece always does. But they add a few things in there. Like I think we even mentioned in the last episode, they mentioned that like Odin was on Gold Roger's crew, and someone even mentions like, oh, so he must know the same secrets that Riley did. And then we actually mentioned that like those are the people that we know were on Gold Roger's crew at this point. Right. Riley or how you pronounce his name?
Rayleigh.
Sorry.
Yeah.
And Odin. So they mentioned that like those are the people who know the secrets of things. And then the narrator actually gives us kind of an overview. I think they did last week too, but I think they went a little longer this time, basically saying like literally the One Piece has something to do with the blank century, and the poneglyphs kind of reveal the history of the blank century. And, you know, here's the Ohara flashback. And then like the world government came out, you know, manifested soon after the blank century, and anything discussing the blank century is forbidden. So kind of laying it out, you know, we all knew this already, but, you know, saying it explicitly, like One Piece has something to do with the blank century. The poneglyphs reveal a history there. The world government came out of that somehow and don't want you to talk about it. And why is that?
Yeah. So, they even showed like Clover being killed and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Toei just kind of over explaining things, but
I mean, I think it could have been a panel or two that was just like, remember when Ohara was burned down? But like, yeah, this is where Toei comes in and like shows it, like, you know, to stretch time. Yeah.
Like, hey, we already animated this. We can cut up. We can fill a minute of time here by showing this part of this episode again. or whatever. But yeah, I just want to point out that they're pretty much explicitly kind of laying it all out. So yeah. This is what it's about.
So we learn in this episode that the reason that Kaido wants to capture the samurai is because he believes that they have the secret knowledge of the poneglyphs. But the samurai explain to the Straw Hats and everybody there that they actually don't know anything about it. They don't know anything about what the poneglyphs say.
And the red-haired samurai, whose name I always keep forgetting, even mentions, like, even if we did know, we wouldn't tell you.
Right.
It seems like they don't actually know.
Right. And they also mentioned that the last thing that Odin said before he died, he said, quote, "Do it for me. Open Wano's borders," unquote. So this is like Odin's final wish. And then interestingly enough, Brook speaks up and he says, yes, Wano is a country that's closed. People aren't allowed to leave it and they don't allow people in.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. But also interesting too, that like it's Brook that says this. And I don't think there's a lot about that other than the fact that I think just Brook's old, you know, so he knows things.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that he mentions that. The Minks say something else interesting in this moment, I think, that is worth noting. And because they're talking about, like, you know, the Mink clan have always been, you know, because of our history with Odin, we've always been on the side of the Kozuki clan. You know, we may have been beaten recently by that evil Jack character, but he hadn't seen us at our true power. We have another ace up our sleeve. Wink, wink.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down also. Dogstorm mentions they have one final ace, but they leave it at that.
That's all they said. Yep. So, yeah.
I have written down here, somewhere around this point, the Raizo, as well as the samurai, basically say, this is what our mission is. This is what we want to do. We want to kill the Shogun of Wano, as well as Kaido. So, like not just dethrone him, not just knock him out of power. They're like, we want to kill the Shogun, whoever he is. We don't know who he is yet, or at least I don't. So we kind of have these two collaborators in Wano, as I understand it. Kaido, who we're familiar with at this point, and then the Shogun, who's basically in power, you know, working with Kaido. And the mission is to basically take them both out.
Yep, exactly.
And I actually even wrote down here, one of my notes, I didn't write down who said it. It's one of the samurai. It's like, Luffy, if you agree, and you too, Law. Like, they actually explicitly mentioned, like, we want Law to help out too. And Law's like, wait, how did I get tied up in this?
Yeah. Yeah. This is when they beg Luffy for help. They kind of get down and they're like, please, Sir Luffy, help us in our mission to save our homeland from these two evil tyrants. And then right before the commercial, Luffy goes, I refuse. And it's like, huh? So anyway, come back from the commercial. And Nami's like, first of all, everyone's beating up on Luffy. Some of the guys are, and they're like, Luffy, you idiot. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
And Usopp then, but Nami's like, especially. She's like, oh, but we can do it. You know, you just pay us, you know, and she's got like the berry symbols in her eyes.
Yeah. It's kind of just a joke where at first she's like, I actually understand where Luffy's coming from. And for a moment you think maybe like, wait, does she see that Luffy has a point? And then she's like, we can get money from this. And like, nope, she doesn't have a point. Yeah. He just wants to bribe him.
Right. But yeah, we learn the real reason that Luffy says this is because he's mad. He looks over at Momo and he says, why won't you say anything? And it's like, I'm not going to listen to these guys. Aren't you supposed to be their leader? He's just basically kind of bully teaching Momo here not to be a baby, basically.
Yeah. Tough love.
Tough love kind of thing. And, you know, he's been crying this whole time and Momo finally kind of cries out and he says,
I assume this part is also just stretched out in the anime
a little bit
because Momo takes like several minutes to like walk to Luffy, kind of like, I guess, puff out his chest and like force himself to say, like, to ask for help. I assume in the manga this is, you know, just a few panels you can kind of glance over, whatever,
right?
They really so draw too. It out here, so.
Yeah, we even see like, and I think this probably was in the manga too, but we do see like a flashback to him.
Oh yeah,
looking up at Kaido and Kaido looking down at him, you know, basically telling him off. He does. He's like, I want to man up and beat Kaido, and then Luffy's like, okay, I agree. And then this is when the aptly named Ninja Pirate Mink Samurai Alliance is formed.
Yep.
And this is when Law also walks up to Luffy and is like, he's okay with it, but he's like, you know, you could have at least asked me.
I actually wrote this down because I had mentioned, like, I think in the previous episode, like, Law is like, I don't know what Law is planning to do here, because like, this wasn't really part of his original goal. You know, now he's around and has a choice to make. And then Law tells Luffy, you should have run it by me first. And Luffy says, it's cool though, right? And then Law says, it is, but still. So he is upset that Luffy didn't like run it by him. But regardless, he's in on it, I guess. Like, he agrees. I don't know what he plans to do, but he's a part of this mission now. I suppose.
Yep, he is. Yeah, he's one of the pirates that's part of the alliance now. So yeah, and that's pretty much where the episode ends. The new alliance is formed. And this new alliance is going to eventually one day take down Wano. That's the goal.
So that's the immediate plan and course of action, right? We're going to go to Wano. We're not forgetting anything. We can just go straight to Wano.
They haven't forgotten anyone. They're not going there. It's just funny because, like I said last week, there's so much being set up here that is not even going to be relevant for a long time. It's literally years away that we're going to get to this point. I remember when the next arc was in the manga. Like, I didn't used to read One Piece. I was only just watching it on Toonami, and kind of like from time to time I'd go back and read chapters to kind of learn things that had happened in the anime. The Toonami anime showings. But it was around this time that I started reading. It was right around Zoe when I started reading the manga. And so once they go into the next arc, you know, I was like, okay, I'm kind of interested to see where this goes, what happens here. And I started reading the manga ever since then. And so I am familiar with the manga from Zoe onward. And like, yeah, it's just.
Have you watched like the Japanese airing of the anime, or maybe like some episodes?
I've seen like an episode, but not that much. No.
Okay. I mean, yeah,
although I will say I watched the most recent episode, the one that just came out, because I was curious.
That's what I wondered. I feel like probably a fair few manga readers, they'll like their primary way to consume One Piece is to read it, and then they might watch like key episodes here and there. Like, oh, big battles or big moments. How did this get adapted? Kind of thing.
That's exactly what I've done. Yeah.
All I know about One Piece right now is there's some new character called Inu-sama who is very important. I don't know who it is.
Yeah, that's in the manga.
Right. That's someone mentioned. That's what I meant. Yeah, sorry. Let me be clear. I sometimes through osmosis hear things about like modern One Piece, like where it is right now in the manga. And I guess there's a character right now named Inu-sama who is important. And I'm like, I have no idea who that is. But apparently it's very important.
Yeah. The new season of the anime, the new, like, you know, the new short season.
Yeah.
Did air its first episode this week. And, good news is that it had amazing animation, although I think that was a, they do this from time to time. They've been doing it a lot more recently where like the animation style will be okay. And then they'll have an episode that's just like, make your eyes bleed. It's so good. Mm-hmm. This was one of those where it was just like, oh my God, the animation is like film quality animation in this episode. Especially since I guess it's like the first episode of
they kind of had to this would be the episode you'd want to show off on,
right?
The first one.
The bad news. Well, it may not be bad, but it makes me concerned. Is that it's still only one chapter?
Oh,
so
does it still have the 2 minute opening or whatever?
No, you know what's funny? There was no opening, but I think they're saving that for the next episode. But there actually was no opening at all.
Yeah, it seems relatively common in anime for like sometimes the first episode is a cold open and then it like ends with the opening, or they bring the opening in the second episode. So I guess they're doing something like that.
What they did in this one was it was interesting. They did no opening, but then they showed like credits over black with just the song, I guess. Huh. I think the song that's going to be in the opening, I think. So yeah, it was a very, very, like, there was no like filler. There was no filler. Let's put it that way. That was a good thing. There was no filler. It was all stuff. And again, they didn't even use like, there was no flashback. I don't remember. Maybe there was, I don't remember. No, not flashback.
But maybe just still, some, you know, pacing strategies to fit one chapter per episode.
I think maybe, yeah. I saw some people commenting on it that might very well continue to be the case.
Now remind me, is this LBAF arc, or are we not there yet? Or am I?
Yes.
Okay. All I know is like relatively modern One Piece is LBAF arc. I don't know if it just started, just completed. I don't know. Like I just hear these things like popping up here and there. And like,
that's what the arc is that's beginning. Although they're not like even there yet, technically. Well, I guess technically they are. They are in the very last minute of the episode, but yeah.
And like that's not really a spoiler to me. Like, oh, they had to eventually.
You know arc names. Like, can you name the next three arcs?
Whole Cake, Wano, LBAF? I don't know.
No, you missed one.
Am I missing one? Yeah.
You're missing, actually kind of missing two. Yeah. There's one that happens right at the end of Dressrosa, between Dressrosa and Wano. It's not a big arc. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I probably have seen it, but off the top of my head, I can't think of it.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you're missing the last arc before LBAF.
Yeah.
That's a big one. That's a great arc. That's a really good one. I like that one a lot. I couldn't get into Wano. Everybody loved it apparently, but I wasn't that into it. And I think it was too long because it's broken up into like three chapters, quote, so to speak,
like three,
like acts, to the point. Yeah. Three acts, like acts of a play. And yeah. And it's like, okay, I don't know. I think you have to be a real big fan of Japan. And I like Japan, but this is like, you have to be a fan of like Japanese history.
That more like warring states, feudal era type.
Kind of. Yeah. Like samurai era type stuff. And it's like, that stuff's okay, but I wasn't that into it, but yeah. Anyway, the next arc after that one, I was much more into. I thought that was way more interesting. So yeah. Okay. Anyway. So the alliance is formed in One Piece, and we're not going to Wano. just yet. We'll get there one day. We got other places to be, but we're not done here either. There's still a little more, unfortunately. I mean, not really unfortunately, but there's still more to happen here.
Yeah. Do they have to take care of Jack or something?
Yeah. Something to that effect. Right. Yeah. I think we're still about like three or four more episodes before they get ready to leave, I think. And like I said, there is a filler anime arc that happens right after.
Oh yeah.
Zo. that's like a 3-episode filler as well. So, and that is it for One Piece. Let's talk about flavor alerts.
Flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
I'd be willing to add the Evil Eye flashback as a best moment. What do you think?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. Kind of thought that was pretty cool. And I'm real close to wanting to nominate Gigi as a character because I'm digging him. I think he's pretty cool.
I was also we've talked about this before, but like, do we nominate Draken? And now I'm wondering, do we nominate Mikey as like best character?
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I say go for it. I say okay. Go for nominate Mikey. Like, who knows? We might be premature and he might do something really stupid in the next episode. We don't know. But at this point, like, he's definitely out of the male characters in that show. Like, he's got more depth and, you know, interest to him than most of the cast.
Yeah.
Like, I was not expecting him to go up to that other character and basically like be a little bit like vulnerable, but also in like very much in like a, like, he's like, how do I put this? He's being a leader by showing like, some compassion towards his like subordinates. And he's kind of like, he's kind of subverted some tropes before, and we've talked about this. You know, so I think he's just worth being a nomination. And like I said, maybe he'll do something really dumb, and when it comes down to actually voting for this, we'll knock him out. But I think for now, he's worth just having being in the list.
Yeah. Do you want to wait a little longer before we consider Gigi?
Yeah, probably. Okay. We've seen 2 episodes. Yeah, let's just see how this
resolves. Yeah.
Right.
The thing that really kind of won me over in this episode with him a bit is when he was conversing with like the child form of the Evil Eye, and like he like made it smile by like being like, "Oh, you really want friends, huh?" And he just starts like kind of doing like a little like music thing. He's like, "Da da 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 da, I'll be your friend." And I was like, "That's really nice." He's like really heartless in that way, or heartful, I guess. Heartless is the wrong word. He has a lot of heart.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
All right, anything else?
I think that's good for now.
Sounds good to me. All right. So that will do it for episode 469 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I want to thank Crocodile for being here earlier and giving his thoughts, and thank you for being here as well, Seda.
No problem.
All right, and we should be back next week with another set of these episodes. And until then, later.